Perception versus the truth. Jason Burmess on today's News Talk, TNT.
Seduced and abandoned. So today I'm scrolling through my news feeds as I usually do, because how else would I know what's going on in the world unless I'm taking a look? And I see that Ben Affleck and Jennifer Garner's 15-year-old daughter has now come out as non-binary and is going to be known as Finn. So, of course, the tabloids ask, why is it that so many A-list celebrities have quote-unquote trans kids? Now, let me start with, there are no such things as trans and non-binary children. First, there are no such things as non-binary people, because we're human and we're biological and we're not zeros and ones, period. I know a lot of people want to play into the very Hollywood celebritard theory that we're in a simulation. We're not. Let's work with base reality here. And they're working away from base reality. Seduced and abandoned. Now, when I saw this, I have a very simple answer. I'm going to read directly from my tweet. It's pretty simple, really. Hollyweird is a cesspool of mental illness, and kids growing up with celebrity parents often lack getting the attention needed to grow a healthy bond with them. So they will turn to anything that gets them attention. Now, we live in a society where you're being praised and told you're brave and courageous and getting attention. And you're also in a culture that is absolutely insane, awful, terrible on every level. And I know from experience, because look, I'll say this, I'm pretty well traveled within the United States, only been to Toronto outside of it. But I can tell you that there are three hell pits that I know exist within the country, you know, and I'm not even counting DC. I should, but they're a special kind of hell that we could get into totally later. There are three that I've spent significant time in: Miami, Long Island, and Hollywood / Los Angeles. Now, I keep saying seduced and abandoned. Folks, there's a documentary film out there, and I would encourage people to please go check it out. Stars Alec Baldwin, okay? It's all the way back in 2013, where he's trying to get this remake of a Brando film done, and essentially they follow him through this process. And in this film, Alec Baldwin is actually very honest and very candid. He says, if you're doing for this for a living, you have to be an extremely selfish individual. There's just no way around it. You're basically a sociopath. He didn't use the term sociopath, but he literally tells you they put everything else to the side. What do you think's going to happen with your children that are begging and pleading to have a relationship with their parents? This is like psychology 101, the basics. When you are growing up in that era anyway, when you're that age and you're trying to find who you are, there's already a ton going on, so many obstacles. Can you imagine having parents that really don't even care about you? I mean, honestly, that you're just a side piece to. And I know that sounds too much for people. Any honest A-lister will tell you that's who he or she is. Period, amen, end of story. And that's why that place is a revolting place. That's why I had a distaste in it from the very get-go. I remember when we were spending time there trying to get loose change into theaters. We'd spent about 2 months there. And finally, when everything fell through, I drove 32 straight hours right back to upstate New York, thinking, I am so glad I got out of there. But you know where you should get into? How about a weekend truth festival? If you'd like to see all of your favorite freedom fighters on one stage across one weekend, then listen up. The Weekend Truth Festival will feature speakers such as Katie Hopkins, Kate Shimoniarni, Dolores Cahill, Matt Letizier, Mark Atwood, David Clues, Allegedly Dave, Sovereign Pete, and many others, all across one weekend on the 3rd, 4th, and 5th of May in Workington near the Lake District in the UK. All you need to do is bring a tent, a sleeping bag, and some good vibes. Love the good vibes, as food stalls, workshops, bushcraft, and amenities will all be provided on site. For more information and to find out how to reserve your place at the festival, please visit weekendtruthfestival.co.uk. But don't hang around, because only a limited number of places are still available. We're going to take a quick break and be back with Adam bringing the ruckus.
Be a part of the conversation.
I want representation I can trust.
Have your say.
Biden isn't doing enough.
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Emergency service systems tied to 911 went offline across several states on Wednesday night, including parts of Nebraska, Nevada, Texas, and the entire state of South Dakota. And even though the online conspiracy theorists probably won't believe it, an official cause for the outage has finally been revealed, sort of, kind of, maybe. Here with the story, joining me now is TNT News producer Adam Clark. What do we got, Adam?
Well, to be honest, Jason, I'm not necessarily buying it either, but hey, it is what it is. We got to take the official statements with a grain of salt, I suppose. The conspiracy theorists, I'm sure, are like, oh, it's a deep state China operation from Obama, funded by Soros, and they hacked a ship or something. I don't know. Who knows what they thought? But yes, it's true that states were without 911 services, which is absolutely wild. And quite potentially a wake-up call for folks who might want to reconsider that whole Second Amendment thing. Anyway, we do have a reason, at least for part of the states, because it was across four states, but apparently three of the states, why they were offline had something to do apparently with the installation of a light pole. Yep, if you can believe it, a light pole installation is going to take out 911 emergency services. Yeah, all right. Well, this is according to the company who has come forward and accepted responsibility. They are called Lumen. That's an interesting name. The conspiracy theorists should have fun with that one, just saying. Here is what Lumen Global Issues Director Mark Molzen told CNN on Thursday morning. Quote, on April 17, some customers in Nevada, South Dakota, and Nebraska experienced an outage due to a third-party company installing a light pole unrelated to our services, end quote. What? The plot thickens. The outage lasted less than 3 hours, according to Molzen, who said Lumen, a networking company that provides enhanced 911 services to local communities in multiple states, quote, worked hard to fix it as quickly as possible, end quote. Molzen declined to elaborate on exactly how the light pole installation resulted in the 911 outage or where the pole was located. The 911 director in Douglas County, Nebraska, which encompasses Omaha, said in a statement, Lumen informed the county the outage was related to a quote-unquote fiber cut. Molzen said, quote, we apologize for the inconvenience and appreciate our customers' patience and understanding, end quote. Service had largely been restored by Thursday morning, hours after agencies in the four states announced outages in multiple cities, with some urging residents in need of assistance to either text 911 or call using a landline. People still have those? The outages had been largely addressed within hours, however, including Sioux Falls and Rapid City, South Dakota, and Las Vegas. The FCC confirmed on X Twitter that it was, quote, aware of reports of 911-related outages, and we are currently investigating, end quote. I'm curious, who do you call when 911 is down? You can't call 911. Authorities in Del Rio, Texas also advised residents Wednesday evening of a quote-unquote outage that affected 911 calls, but a city spokesperson confirmed those issues were not related to the broader service outage in three other states. You see, Lumen does not provide 911 services in Texas, as confirmed by Molzen. The Del Rio Police Department on Wednesday attributed problems to a, quote, major cellular carrier, end quote, telling residents to contact emergency services using, again, a landline or another carrier. But Del Rio, quote, was not affected by the 911 service issues experienced in other cities, end quote. That's what city spokesperson Peter Ojeda told CNN on Thursday. An outage by a single mobile provider, quote, affected their network broadly, end quote. So residents were advised to reach emergency services through other methods. It's Texas, so they were probably fine. Ojeda said, quote, our emergency services remained fully operational throughout the incident, and there was no 911 outage in Del Rio, end quote. As far as the, where is it here? I'm so sorry. As we were indicating here, news of the outage on Wednesday night immediately got some people worried about things like potential cyber attacks, which have increasingly targeted critical infrastructure over the past decade. And although, according to Gizmodo, this particular incident appears to be an accident, it's not unreasonable to assume cyber attacks could be to blame during mass outages. But sometimes, like during AT&T's recent outage in February, it's just a mistake. So, Jason, what say you? Was this an intentional conspiracy, a cyber attack, or was this just a series of unfortunate events?
First of all, let's start with the idea of the cyber attack to take out the infrastructure that we've now seen for 2 to 3 decades via mainstream movies, television shows, and the media. Let's start there. Now, first of all, people that don't read past the headline won't understand that I would hope, and it seems like, the actual infrastructure of 911 went nowhere. That means that these are landlines. Hopefully they have redundancy and can always receive calls. It wasn't like they couldn't receive calls. It was the carriers that could not make these calls, which is extremely bizarre, right? When you look at that, almost does sound like a software bug of sorts. But let's say it is a software bug or an attack. There's so much plausible deniability surrounding it. It shouldn't exist. Right? That shouldn't be a feature in Verizon, in T-Mobile, in AT&T, but since all the telecommunication companies have worked hand in glove, everybody, hand in glove with the National Security Agency pre-9/11, again, I encourage people to check out Hepting versus AT&T, we really don't know. Now, again, you made the point that if they wanted to call 911, they could still go to a landline and make that call. I would also posit, if that were the case, there would be ways around it. If you had an internet connection, to use a third-party service to project what would be a landline to 911. But essentially, these bad boys, even if they're not active, are supposed to be always hooked to the emergency network. Why would this be any different from the regular cellular network? Because again, it seems from this story, people could still make calls, still do texts, still download everything. So it's a very bizarre thing. I'm going to say that. And I think that one of the other likelihoods, if we are talking about cyber attacks, we could really just be talking about corporate espionage, right? That could be a part of it, or perhaps government espionage into corporations that aren't cooperating the way they like. I think it's up in the air. I don't think it's one piece of equipment and a malfunction by any means. That sounds like a cover story up and down. But what are your thoughts?
Yeah, the reporting on it does seem, it seemed fishy to me personally. And, you know, I was throwing a little nod to the name of the company too. I always found that a little strange. It's called Lumen, because that kind of makes me think Illuminati kind of stuff. You never know. I didn't see the number 33 hiding in any of the reports, so I'm sure we're okay, folks. Calm down. But to your point, I don't know. Maybe, just maybe, if anything, it could have been a test of some sort, because I don't put it past our various factions within the government to be doing those types of things, getting ready for something big, maybe the next fake alien invasion or civil war or whatever the heck they want to pull closer to the elections. But I'm not buying their answer that this was mostly due to a light pole installation messing with a fiber optic cable, to be honest.
Well, again, or shutting down the ability of the general populace to get in touch with these services in an emergency that goes off. I think that is a valid point and question. And just as the redundancy issue, and you look at this cyber hacking, there is no reason for our power plants or our infrastructure to be online hackable and capable. They should be on access only. They should have their own infrastructure, their own power systems and generators and backups. And by the way, the vast majority of them do. So I think in a lot of cases, these have been set up to fail or red herring arguments. So, you know, I always kind of take a step back. I'm glad that it wasn't 911 itself that was down, but it does seem odd again that your little magic box service provider was involved in that, because everybody's got a magic box, my friend, and everybody, oh, they're looking at that magic box and what's going on. The truth of the matter is you're being track traced, database surveilled like you wouldn't believe by that magic box, and you've consented to it time and time and time again by clicking that box. Adam, we will see you in the second hour. We got a great story coming up for you. I can't wait. This is going to be a fun episode. You're not going to want to miss the second hour. We're going to come back with Kriston Harris. He is the man behind the Rundown Live. We're going to be talking Hollyweird, celebritard culture, AI, and also kind of the youth culture surrounding that as well. Back with more TNT Radio Live after this.
TNT's Blend It Open.
Money is a problem for you. Does that make you into a communist?
Not at all, not at all. It's just the way that money is brought into circulation. You know, most people don't understand that concept. We live in a debt-based fiat economy. And the way that money is brought into circulation is basically out of thin air. You know, you go to the bank, you ask for a loan, a mortgage or something. The bank doesn't hold those funds within their vaults, whatever you want to call it, and then they literally press a button and that money gets brought into circulation through thin air through the Bank of England and given to that person. And then that person has to pay that money back with interest on top. So that whole concept of the way money is brought into circulation, it is a form of control.
Flip it.
And today's news talk, TNT.
A better business tip from TNT Radio. News Talk Radio listeners are some of the most active and involved listeners of any format. TNT Radio listeners rely on TNT Radio often as their primary source of information. They trust TNT Radio and are highly engaged with the content. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live.
It's time to switch on
today's news talk radio.
Very entertaining.
Yeah. TNT.
Here to give us the rundown live on AI and much more is veteran on the ground journalist and talk show host, Kriston T. Harris. My man, thank you so much for joining us. Now, we're going to be talking artificial intelligence in a lot of different respects, but one of the stories out there that is gaining some traction is we see these YouTube channels popping up, and they're essentially AI trailers of movies that don't exist. And we've got this one with Henry Cavill and 007. It's got 23 million views. I've got sent the Popeye one where it's Conor McGregor as Popeye, everybody. And people actually thought these things were real. I thought they were somewhat poorly done, but it is kind of getting Hollywood's attention. It is getting people excited about things that aren't real. And I think that this is just the beginning, because obviously AI has not gone full consumer when we are talking about video just yet.
First of all, Jason, thanks for inviting me onto this broadcast to have a conversation. And how dare you insult non-binary people? I identify as a bank and I'm trans financial, and my dollars should be identified as hundreds. And I'm very insulted at this, by the way. Trans financial right here identifies a billionaire, and somebody should give me $1 billion because that's how I identify. I just want you to know that up front. But yeah, AI is a very interesting subject, especially when you're talking about in the movie industry, because what are these actors and actresses going to do? We saw with the latest Indiana Jones that part of the movie was actually edited with AI to make Indiana Jones look youthful. So these artists are signing away their features and what they look like to make future movies or movies in the future. Maybe you'll see Indiana Jones, Fate of Atlantis, and it will be Harrison Ford, but it won't be Harrison Ford. It'll be AI generated Harrison Ford. Look at the Nirvana hit that came out. I forgot what it was coming. It was called Chasing or Looking or Staring at the Sun or something like that. Like, there's full albums out there that are going to be created. Just think about it. If you are a movie script writer, you don't need a crew or casting anymore. You just enter it into AI, tell it who you want to play what part, and you just upload your script and it'll generate that movie for you. So the future is going to be a very interesting thing. And what we're seeing here is a lot of these deep fakes are used in an entertainment facet. However, my question I pose to you is, what are we going to do once they start entering in the political arena? Like, once we start getting those Donald Trump and Joe Biden deep fakes where they are saying something or not saying something controversial or doing something controversial, and people will start saying, hey, I saw this video of Donald Trump and this female, or I saw Joe Biden sniffing on this young kid, which might be a real video, to be honest. But, you know, it's interesting when we talk about deepfake AIs. Not only that, you know, when we talk about AIs, even the youth and people in general are turning to AI in relationships. One of the top billionaire execs out there, or excuse me, the top tech execs, says that the AI girlfriend market is going to be a $1 billion market. What's so bad about dating a human that people need to go and turn to AI, Jason?
It is frightening to me, and I think you probably remember the Hollyweird film. We're going deep in Hollyweird today. The Hollyweird film Her, and it was a Spike Jones movie, and I loved Being John Malkovich. See, I'm a sucker for a lot of this entertainment as well, folks. I thought it was a brilliant film. Spike Jones heavily involved in the Jackass crew. I like to laugh. I think all of those have humorous merit, if you will. But when I saw Her, and I'm not saying he did a bad job, because I think a lot of it was made to make you feel uncomfortable, but the entire movie, I felt dirty. And it is about Joaquin Phoenix's character basically developing a relationship with a phone-like device that is also Scarlett Johansson. And it's, you know, this bubbly girl that keeps talking to him, never actually sees the person. But he ends up, spoiler alert, it's been around for a while, ends up falling in love with it, and he is far from the only person. And right now, we already have live time apps where you're video conferencing somebody that may be having a filter. You talked about deepfakes, where they don't look, it's not just the dog apps anymore, and the rave apps, and the bunny ears, which were all horrible. Folks, I just want you to know, I don't even use emojis. You know why? I'm not a 14-year-old girl. So all this stuff has never been in my world, but it's been out there. But now, you know, it's not just you're in a dating app and someone's face is smudged. You don't know what that person looks like in real time. These are real things. And soon, that's going to be circumvented by AI. You know, so it is scary to me that a generation is growing up essentially to indulge in these metaverse fantasies and these virtual realities that are the opposite of real, Kastan.
Well, where does it lead? So all of a sudden you have AI girlfriend, right? And then they have these, very attractive female robots or male robots. And maybe you can download AI into these human-like robots. As we know, everyone's working in the robot market. There's something called bio-hybrid robotics, where they get living tissue now to grow on robots so they look human and they act human. Bio-hybrid robotics, and it's a real thing. It's synthetic biology. So, and even one step further, we know they're cloning dogs and cats. Well, maybe you'll just purchase a DNA blueprint of a human body, and then in the future, that body will come with a brain chip interface, and you can just download that AI of whatever that perfect girlfriend is into another clone body. Or, you know, maybe the leader already doing cloned human bodies to harvest body parts. Who knows? To all reality, that's where the end game goes, is this future where we get everything we want out of a relationship and a person, and we are not learning to deal with real bumps in the road and stick it through the hard times. We got a very, Joe Glass, or what is it? Unbreakable, where the character, Mr. Glass there, he's always breaking his bones. Everyone's egos are easily hurt. Everyone's, confidence is easily hurt because they haven't learned how to take a hit. and stay standing. They take a hit and they crumble. And so the first thing someone's going to want to do is get that perfect girlfriend, download that perfect girlfriend into a robot, or make it realistic by downloading it into a human type figure. And I think that's where the future rolls with a lot of this. We're talking down the road 10, 15, 20 years. But I'm not saying that, I'm telling you that this is real. This is not something that is no longer limited to Demolition Man or Total Recall. We're getting there, Jason.
We are on the way. I hope that your timeline is just a little off. I do see a lot of the synthetic biology that you're talking about, but right now I see the hard sell on virtual reality and the hard sell also on controlling information, things like deepfakes that might become political. And I think that when we talk about transhumanism, there's a lot of categories, but the two main categories is you have a class of people that think that they can biologically live forever and probably want to humanly experiment on the populace, see what works and doesn't, and then really convince the serf class that they can upload their consciousness as they spend more and more time in a virtual environment, leading them really to euthanize themselves in favor of a digital twin that will live forever. We're going to talk about that and a whole lot more on the other side of this break. We're going to hit the news headlines. It's TNT Radio Live, back after this.
Now's a good time to break the big news.
TNT Radio News.
For TNT, this is James O'Neill. The U.S. Senate successfully passed a procedural vote with a 67-32 majority to move forward with reauthorizing Section 702 of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, or FISA, which is set to expire on April 19th. Russia's investigative committee has charged four Ukrainian military colonels in absentia with mass murder, according to Moscow's Kamenevsky court.
Are you enjoying listening to TNT Radio?
Do you think we're doing a good job?
Then please let us know. Why not leave us a like or a positive review or comment on Facebook, Gab, or Getter? Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time on today's news talk, TNT Radio.
We are back, and you know, we were kind of talking about a Westworld type future, and Kristen, when you get out of the park, for those not familiar with Westworld, it's actually based on a Michael Crichton book and then movie back in the 70s. And they made this series of these synthetic type human beings really asking the question whether or not they could become conscious and eventually revolt against their creators. But when you get out of the park, I mean, it's autonomous everything. It's rockets being propelled up and down. It's the carbon credit system. It's the UBI. It's the mask wearing. It's the virtual humans talking to you. It's a social credit score and rating on your phone. It's literally a blueprint where it seems the Davos crowd and the globalist crowd, the Bilderberg crowd, etc., want to bring humanity. So in a lot of ways, I think that these are more than just kind of science fiction. It is predictive programming.
Yeah, I don't disagree with it being predictive programming. I think that when you look at the term artificial and intelligence, artificial is going to be the vessel, but the intelligence may be pretty close to real. The question is that what happens once we get there and it is at somewhat, conscious and can have the communication and the new civil rights movement that goes with robotics or even trying to give them their own constitution. Now, that doesn't mean that's what I agree with, but that's what I feel that the general globalist think tank is moving towards. You mentioned digital twins and uploading your consciousness in the computer. Well, when we go to the eugenics agenda, what about life-term expectations? Maybe they'll have a life-term expectation that you get to live to be 30 or 35, and then you get uploaded. And we know that they're already working on solid light and 3D holographic technology. In fact, they have 3D holograms that are very interactive in the shape and form of something that you see on Star Wars, right? There's companies out there that are really pioneering this technology. So maybe in the future, you'll be able to speak to your ancestors and have their data all uploaded, and they're going to sell it to the youth through education. So that's the biggest concern with transhumanism. mechanism. You also mentioned the biological aspect. I think there's a more diabolical, mechanical aspect to a lot of things. Let's be honest. Transhumanism is a technology that can be used for good or evil. If I could live to be 300 years in this meat suit and this beautiful face and read every book in the library and gather that knowledge, I would love for that opportunity. But once we start talking about exchanging and swapping out body parts like oil changes, whether it's mechanical or from a cloned version of your body, I have to ask you, at what time does your soul leave your body? You know, it's a very interesting idea. But the question and the most concerning aspect is, how is this going to impact the future when we start diving into designer babies, CRISPR gene editing, and where all this technology is really going? And that is post-genderism, the idea that men and women will be designed without genders, right, in the artificial womb, and men and men could have babies and women could have babies, or, you know, whatever. You can create a little Baphomet baby if you so choose.
I wish you were making that up. You should read Unzipped Genes by Martin Rothblatt, who is one of the most powerful transgender / transhumanist people out there. Wrote this in 97, and it lays out taking charge of baby making in the new millennium, lays out exactly what he said. This is by the way, the founder of Sirius XM Radio, works with the National Security Agency, NASA, second richest. And actually, I think one year, Forbes, maybe in 2016 to 18, ranked him, it used to be Martin, but her as the most powerful woman in business. I just want to let everybody, you should pay attention to this. This is real. In fact, I want to kind of move on to some of the other aspects of not only artificial intelligence, but regulating what we can and cannot do with artificial intelligence and our phones. Number one, we've got this idea that quote unquote cyber flashing is going to become illegal. This is the, we'll just say it's sexting. Now, I don't want to encourage kids to get involved in sexting. Obviously it happens. But this gives the excuse to get into every single phone and analyze everything in real time. This is a problem. And just like with AI, they want to regulate it in a manner where we don't get to use true learning or large language models, right? They want to have the narrative. You know, the new CEO of NPR, for instance, likes the fact that social media can curate content, but not that you have a First Amendment.
Right.
It's absolutely, that's what we're seeing right now. So let's talk about those dangers. And really, on top of that, we also live in a highly sexualized society right now. And, you know, there are problems with these apps, and it's trickling down into dangerous territory into what these kids are into.
Well, first of all, I gotta mention that this is a very the fine line between flashing and real life. For those that don't know what cyber flashing is, imagine when you were a kid, there was a guy in a trench coat, he'd go around flashing people. Well, that's what flashing is when he exposes himself with a nude body underneath, and then he closes real quick and walk away. We had a bike trail when I was growing up where an individual was doing this, and we were all made aware to stay away, and they arrested that individual. So what cyber flashing is those unsolicited nude pics that people receive. It may be you've gotten them. I know I've gotten them as a bartender. You know, when I used to bartend back in the day, and people, I think if you talk to females, a lot of them will say that they've received unsolicited nudes, and that is cyber flashing. Should there be a law against that, I guess, is the question. We don't want any additional reason for the government to snoop in our metadata, but the truth is they already are, and we don't want them to have any other reason. I think we need to impose and enforce the laws we already have on the books there. But the question is what are we going to do if somebody reports that, you know, so you sent them a nude and they felt, you know, overall, I think there's a difference between reporting somebody for sending a nude than the government actually going through every metadata analytical, you know, bit to find out what's being sent over the phone and sent via social media. But the question is do we want these kind of pictures sent to children who are also heavily being sexualized by this type of, I would say, technology? There's a whole conversation going on right now about children in middle school and high school taking pictures of women they deem attractive and running it through the AI generator to generate nudes. So at what point does that become child pornography?
Well, that is a good question. And again, we haven't really gotten to the level of AI text to video on a consumer level, but we have seen what Sora can do. You alluded to the fact that AI is probably taking over Hollywood in a lot of ways that we can't imagine. And I think you're right about the likenesses and the nostalgia, but I also think it's going to create fully AI generated superstars over time, which is another issue and a really one that we have to look at as well. At the same time, I also think the political aspects, that could be our October surprise. We could see AI-generated content that is portrayed as real during the election. Meanwhile, real content that may come out will deem to be AI and have a warning or be banned altogether. Kristan, thank you so much for joining us. Love you, brother. We will see you soon. And again, AI is going to be everywhere in so many different aspects. It is changing our lives as we speak. And I got to tell you, I don't want more government regulation of anything, especially a tool that can be utilized and is being utilized, in my opinion, against the betterment of the general populace. When you have narrative management like we've seen throughout the COVID-1984 nightmare, and then Google, that used to be don't be evil, is generating content, text-to-speech, that is clearly racist, I think we have a problem. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back. More TNT Radio Live after this.
From weather and traffic reports to news of political developments, we turn to journalists for the information we need to live our daily lives.
Journalists around the world providing news that is essential for democracy,
for personal freedom, and for safety and stability.
Yet their ability to report freely and safely is under attack like never before.
Too many journalists are paying with their lives.
They face exponential risks, and they've already paid a heavy toll.
Death threats, online harassment, and physical attacks
are becoming a daily experience of journalists in all countries.
We just want people to be safe, to be able to get our readers the information that they need to make informed decisions.
They checked my phone and realized that it was Pegasus. I feel myself like I'm naked at the street.
These charges were politicized from the start.
Facts win. Truth wins. Justice wins.
C'est énorme pour moi d'être là, d'être libre. Surtout que je m'y attendais pas du tout.
Stand with a free press.
Stand with journalists whose reporting won't be silenced. Press freedom is your freedom.
Whatever happened to good? It's a word that gets thrown around a lot, and it's become our automatic answer to so much.
Hey, how's things?
Good.
Your mom, your weekend?
Good, good. Is good even that good anymore? At the Salvos, we believe good deserves better. Let's reclaim its true meaning. To us, good has always been about making a difference, and good never picks or chooses who it helps. Isn't it time we all remember what good really means?
This is the Jason Burmess Show on today's News Talk, TNT.
It is my utter pleasure to be joined by Amy Peacock. I've been following her ever since we saw Parler taken down in a fashion that was clearly anti-free speech. And I'll never forget when you were talking about the Faustian bargain that had been made with big tech and the government. Currently, you're with BitChute, a platform that predates Rumble. And I've encouraged, even had some interactions with the guys behind the scene. They are currently expanding into live streaming, monetization, all sorts of great things. So congratulations on that. And thank you for joining us. So for those that are unaware of your background and your fight, now you've been fighting for free speech for a very long time. The big tech issue is not, I wouldn't say relatively new at this point, but you certainly predate that. Let's talk about that. What has your journey been exposing this obvious collusion between these two entities?
Right. So there's actually two issues in which I've been involved that relate to the relationship between big tech and government, and of course, the suppression by big tech of up-and-coming competitors. And those are free speech, of course, and privacy. And privacy was my academic specialty. I did a lot of academic research and writing and publishing about privacy, the so-called right to privacy. And so, you know, this is where I've been following the issue that we'll get to today, you know, talking about this FISA Section 702, the warrantless spying on Americans. I studied the legal doctrine and wrote about the legal doctrine that made statutes like that possible. So this was before I ever got involved in actually working for a social media company. There is a strategic investor who was a strategic investor in both Parler and now in BitChute, who saw my work and was interested, and we were talking, and it was right around the time that Parler was having its surge, and it looked like they actually needed to bring on somebody to deal with policy. And so that's how I got involved.
So let's talk about this, because, you know, right now, I think we have a lawless government. I think we've had one for a very, very long time. I don't think this is necessarily a new phenomenon, especially when we talk about the government and technology companies. I often talk about Hepting versus AT&T and the fact that pre-9/11, you had these secret server rooms where basically all the information was just being funneled into a server to the National Security Agency, and it was twice thrown out of court. You know, obviously, we've gained a lot of leeway for the government since then. The Patriot Act, NDAA, Military Commissions Act, the birth of Homeland Security, the extension of fusion centers by them, and then ultimately this big tech collusion, and also a program that's not discussed enough, and I'm not sure if you're familiar with it, the signature reduction program that William M. Arkin reported on almost 3 years ago in Newsweek, where they have 60,000 people in a program made by the Pentagon. They operate domestically and foreignly. They have access to the infrastructure to create and delete identities at will, which they do. And they're in some of the largest companies and security agencies you could absolutely imagine. This is an open admission. And again, there's never been any oversight of that. I mean, that article is, again, 3 years old, but it'll take you a good hour or two to read it. So what is the recourse? And you just talked about 702. I mean, this really makes every single company that has any type of significant interaction with you have to give over all of their information to the government, does it not, if requested?
I mean, pretty much, you know, there is such a broad targeting standard in 702. It's that they're believed to have foreign intelligence information, where foreign intelligence information is a notoriously broad term. EFF has actually said at one point, at least, that this definition of this term was secret. Some of these things are even secret. We don't even know how broad the term is. So imagine they can target anybody who is overseas according to that standard, and have then an excuse to sweep up conversations of anyone with whom they are communicating here at home, and put it all into this vast database, and then say, oh, it's lawfully collected. So basically, we can do whatever we want with it. We can search it whenever we want. We don't have to have a warrant, et cetera, et cetera. And what is currently before the Senate, which they're going to vote on tomorrow, is the bill that was passed by the House, in which not only have they not added a warrant requirement to it, which every privacy advocate has asked for, and it almost passed in the House. It, you know, lost in a tie where Johnson cast the deciding vote against adding a warrant requirement to it. So no warrant requirement to search the database. In addition, they are expanding the authority, if this passes tomorrow in the Senate, such that they can not only go to the traditional communication service providers and demand, you know, that all the communications get turned over, they can go to any business person who has access to a mode of communication. So a Wi-Fi router and all sorts of other examples of devices. I'm not a techie myself, but you know, they're giving examples like any cable service guy who has to come to your house and maybe mess with your modem could be forced by the government to do something to the modem to give them access to it. And then suddenly you're being spied upon and you don't know it, of course. You know, and that's one of the worst things about these programs is that the tradition was if you were under investigation by our government, an agent would come to you and present a warrant to you. And then you, you know, let them search or you turn over the piece of evidence or whatever it was. Now they go to a third party. You're never aware of it. And of course, they don't even have to present a warrant. No probable cause, no particular suspicion. This is what's up for a vote tomorrow. And it's been abused over 278,000 times over a course of several years. That was documented by Reuters. It was a finding of the court. This program needs to be curbed. You can't trust the FBI to police itself on this, and it certainly doesn't need to be expanded.
You can't trust the FBI to police itself, period, or any of these three-letter agencies, let's be honest. And what really is troubling about this is, you know, you mentioned all those different times that they've utilized this when they shouldn't have. It should be so obvious to at least the spectrum of people that are behind Donald Trump, where they clearly did this to him and his campaign. Again, they convoluted some kind of Russian collusion that was absolutely never there, weaponized the Justice Department against him. And yet this kind of shows that how false the left-right paradigm is. This thing passed through the House with plenty of Republican support, and it may get plenty of Republican support tomorrow.
It might indeed. And one of the interesting things when you bring up Trump was at one point several days ago, there was a post on Truth Social whereby he said something, you know, he does all these all caps posts, right? He types in all caps. And it was something about kill FISA in all caps. And I'm thinking, okay, this is great. Maybe Vivek Ramaswamy has been telling him some good stuff again or something, you know, and he's telling him to kill FISA. And then of course, Johnson, who he supported and as becoming Speaker of the House, Johnson did not kill FISA. In fact, he made sure that it sailed through and he made sure that it didn't have a warrant requirement attached to it either. Right after Johnson had cast the deciding vote against the warrant requirement, got FISA through, he went down to Mar-a-Lago and they had a press conference together. And Johnson was saying nothing about FISA at all, of course. He doesn't want to talk about it. Because he knows he's wrong. I think he knows he's wrong in his heart. Trump, he doesn't know he's walking into. He thinks he's talking about whatever Johnson's talking about. And in the Q&A, because he likes Q&As, he likes to talk, somebody got him with a question about FISA. What do you think about the FISA that just passed? And he said, you know, a lot of his usual nonsense strung together things, right? He said, I've studied FISA better than anybody. That I'm not really a fan of it, but I told Johnson that he could do whatever he wanted with it. And he just completely walked back what he had posted on Truth Social maybe a day or two before about kill FISA, basically, you know, saying, okay. Yeah.
Which is extremely disappointing. Because again, this has been kind of a transactional and naive president. I think that we can't look to anybody to be a hero. I think the other choice is so patently worse and has really shown themselves to be patently worse in the last 4 years. But at the same time, you can go to Operation Warp Speed. You can go to how he handled the Assange situation. You could go to the promise of showing the JFK documents twice. I'm sorry, folks. I'm going to say every single time. If you can't take the deep state on from 1963, all right, now 60 plus years ago, I don't know how you take the deep state on now. I would agree with you that, you know, Ramaswamy, again, he's unproven, but he said a lot of good things. And if he is,
oh, I mean, he steered Trump in the right direction on a few things, definitely. You have to admit that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just saying actions speak louder than words. And I, you know, who knows what's going to happen in the next 7 months? Who knows what's going to happen tomorrow, for God's sake?
Yes.
Again, that sets such a terrible, folks need to understand that sets such a terrible precedent that you could say, you don't need a warrant. You could say infiltrate large swaths of people in political campaigns in real time right after and put that under some kind of special program where you would have mass surveillance, the likes of which you couldn't imagine. And anything they did, it wouldn't be Russian collusion or whatever the pretense was, just like we've seen, they would wage lawfare against them. And I've got news for people. A lot of people that work in DC and around it are very corrupt people, at least on lower levels. It will not be hard to charge them with misdemeanor type crimes or threatened felonies if this thing passes through. That's where I see this
not
going.
Not just them, though. Not just them, right? You and I.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a book. I forget the exact title of it, but the part of the title of the book is Nine Felonies that essentially any of us could be construed to have committed some nine felonies at any given time. And there are so many laws on the books, and some of them, you know, especially in some industries, I used to hear from John Allison, the former CEO of BB&T, in the banking industry, some of the alphabet soup agencies would tell them to do A, and some of the alphabet soup agencies would tell them to do non-A. And so that any given time, they'd have to, of course, choose. They'd have to either do A or non-A, one of the two. And they could be then accountable to the other agency for not doing what they thought you were supposed to do. And, you know, we're not as heavily regulated as a bank, right? Not yet, anyway. But certainly there are things where we think we're doing the right thing, but there's some law according to which we might not be acting exactly perfectly.
So tell me what's going on with BitChute right now, because obviously you guys are expanding. I think that you have been at the forefront of being a true free speech type platform for some time. You do not curate content in the manner that, say, even a Rumble does. I think that your rules and regulations are, hey, we don't want to see things that are illegal, you know, no snuff stuff. Obviously the basics. Where is this going in the future?
So right now we are adding features. We're actually working on an entire new site redesign that is not too far off. We have added, as you mentioned earlier, monetization. So the first step of that is that we created PayChute. So if you go to payChute.com, you can check it out. It involves, you know, there's ability to blog, to create communities, to have subscriptions, to do something we call chat bombs, whereby you can send, you know, some sort of a token contribution to someone at the same time, maybe with a compliment or a question. We're eventually going to integrate that in with our live stream feature. We do have live stream active on BitChute. We have it with a live chat. We're going to get the chat bombs in there as well. So there's a lot of functionality that we're adding. Like I said, a whole new site redesign. And we also have this new series that we're doing called PodChute, whereby I've been doing interviews of all kinds of interesting people. It's once a week. It's on Wednesdays. People can go check it out on the main BitChute channel. I just interviewed John Ruddick, who is a member of the Legislative Council within the Parliament of New South Wales in Australia. I don't know if you're familiar with him. He's a libertarian, and had a really nice conversation with him right around this time yesterday, actually, because it was morning Australia time.
Now in Australia, obviously we have those cases where they have criminalized speech and they have forced the hand of social media to directly take down. And these hate speech laws continue to become more and more prolific in this country, you know, in these last couple of minutes. What you're in the arena. What do we have to do in order to actually have a large-scale free speech platform that is not throttled by big tech companies that are supposedly their companies because they get sold on the stock market? I'm sorry, Google is a shell company for Alphabet. YouTube works with the NSA, works with NASA, works on quantum computing and artificial intelligence. They're an arm of the government. So how do we start making that separation of this techno-fascistic partnership that clearly targets anything that gains steam and deplatforms on all sides?
Well, as a platform, we have a completely independent stack. So we are not required, you know, relying on a cloud service provider like Amazon, as Parler was. We've got our own servers and et cetera. So going and actually supporting a platform that has done the work to build an independent stack that has good functionality, which BitChute does. It's already solid. It's about to get even better, like I said, with this entire site redesign, et cetera. So yeah, come check it out. And you don't have to give up the other platform at this point. You know, suppose you're still using a YouTube, hoping that somehow their content curation is going to get better sometime in the near future, or maybe it's the monetization that you've become dependent on, et cetera. Start building up alternatives and come check out BitChute. Just cross-post everything. And as we grow and as our monetization expands, we've got ads coming. We're going to have ad revenue sharing coming very soon. Get in on the ground floor and do it.
Amy, thank you so much for joining us, and I couldn't agree more. We have to get ourselves away from these technopolies. Again, you look at Google, they're the number one search engine. If you look at Android and Chrome, they're the number one platform across the world. The number two search engine is YouTube. The number one video platform is YouTube. We haven't even talked about all the other shell companies involving Alphabet. Once again, we got to break free of this big tech conglomerate that is hand in hand with the military industrial complex. Thank you so much. Guys, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back. Great second hour lined up for you. You're not going to want to miss it. More TNT Radio Live after this.